One of the best books that you will ever read is The Millionaire Next Door. What made The Millionaire Next Door so terrific was the reality that anyone could achieve financial freedom without taking unnecessary risks. My name is Gary Gordon, president of Pacific Park Financial. Smart, balanced ETF investing, that's what I do. I manage tens of millions of dollars for hundreds of families with care, consideration, and purpose. If you'd like to learn more about smart, balanced ETF investing, then give me a call. 888-500-GARY. That's 888-500-4279. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ETF Expert or read my daily commentary at www.etfexpert.com.
We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through. You done us wrong.
Charles Kirk of the Kirk Report interviewed me not that long ago. The Kirk Report is one of the most widely read online investment services. And I thought it would be exceptionally helpful if I committed a podcast to this interview that Charles Kirk had with me because it describes my approach to ETF investing, my experience with it, and how I feel about the markets at large, and what individual investors with or without advisors need to know about the markets and ETFs. Not to mention, know a little bit more about me. So, you know, the first thing that Charles Kirk asked was for me to tell a little bit more about myself. And I said, one of the most intriguing things about my background was my intimate familiarity with Southeast Asia. I've lived and worked throughout the region while my 15-year-old daughter, Wei Gordon, is the personal joy of my life. And after having made a name for myself as a CFP on Financial Talk Radio in the 90s, I went from working for others in finance to working for myself. And of course, I've been a prominent advocate for ETFs since the very first spider occurred in the early 90s. Now, Charles wanted to know what I do at my investment firm, Pacific Park Financial. I wanted to know what a typical day looked like. And in essence, I explained that I make all the investment decisions. I meet with clients. I use the internet for podcasting and for web writing. I manage my time between portfolio management, client meetings, and internet activity. I do leave the day-to-day business operations of my registered investment advisor with the SEC to my colleagues at Pacific Park Financial. One of the questions posed to me was, do I invest my money independently or just for clients? And I invest my money in the exact same manner that I do for my clients. My biggest holdings tend to be their biggest holdings. And the only difference is simply a matter of risk tolerance and risk appropriateness. I was asked about what my investment firm does as far as offering unique or special value. And many of you already know this one, but I have an essential philosophy that drives everything I do. And that is that there are four things that can happen to any investment: a big gain, small loss, or a big loss. Three of them are good. And simply put, we don't allow big losses to occur. It's accomplished through stop limit loss orders, hedges, and efforts to combine non-correlating assets. So above all else, what we offer is a measure of protection against downside risk. As for how we decide what to purchase in the first place, I consider it an information processing approach. Fundamentals, technicals, contrarian, historical, seasonal, economic, geopolitical, all info, in my mind, has merit. So I gauge the environment for what bit of info may have the most merit, make a decision, And then I manage that outcome because I can control that outcome for a big gain, or small loss. No big losses. Now, in this topsy-turvy environment of extraordinary volatility that occurred in 2008-09 and again here in 2011 and the flash crash of 2010, a lot of people are unhappy with their advisors. And I was asked about that. My explanation was that there are a lot of salespeople with little formal education who are in this business, and they're told what to invest by the chain of command, or they may fall back on charts alone. Others from financial planning world, and actually that's where I got my training, CFPs, CFAs, CPAs, they fall into a groupthink of fundamental valuation and buy and hold. But since buy and hold and valuation is hotly contested, and because salespeople lack an understanding of what they even sell, that lost decade for both of these folks didn't win many fans. So what I explain to clients is you don't need a stock guru. You need a risk manager. You don't need a person who rarely has time to chat with you. You need a person who can talk about your money and what your money's for, when and how you need that person to talk. So people who want advice require risk managers who have or who are available and who may have an edge in ETF selection through the experience and knowledge. Now, putting my self-interest aside, I do believe that people don't necessarily need an advisor. I think many people can invest by themselves, and I could teach them how to do it in a very brief period of time. You use ETFs, you reduce costs wherever possible, you don't allow a loss to get out of hand, not ever. You recognize the power of yield, interest, dividends, and you invest your own personal time in the management of your money. Now, that aside, so many people still need help because they may not have the time that they should be putting towards the activity. They might not have the interest. And most of all, they may get too emotional to make the unemotional decisions like taking a small loss rather than experiencing a big one. A good money manager is as much a manager of emotions as he is a manager of assets. That money manager also has to have the interest and the time to address risks and apply the knowledge he or she has acquired. I was also asked how I got interested in the markets in the first place. I do think that's interesting for many of my listeners and readers. Not counting high school intrigue of the Wall Street Journal, I grew up in New York and I read it quite a bit. I took a year off my third year of college to live in Taiwan, the Republic of China, in 1987. Turns out that was the first year that Taiwan had opened its markets to the outside world. And it was one of the best performing markets that year, Taiwan. It also turned out, as you may be guessing at this time, is that the world experienced the 87 crash, 22% in a single day. So even when we talk about these 500-point swings right now, we're talking about 5% in a single day, 7%. We've seen 8, but we haven't seen 22% in a single day, and that's why people jumped out windows. So the story goes. But I began developing an approach back in 87, an approach to investing that countered buy and hold and hope for the best. And that's what not having a big loss is all about. Another question asked of me was whether or not I was surprised by anything. Anything has surprised me over time. And I truthfully say not a lot surprises me. I had to think about it and say, well, the fact that it took 4 years between Alan Greenspan uttering irrational exuberance in 96 and the dot-com balloon finally bursting 4 years later, that was more surprising to me than the actual NASDAQ implosion. I think the only thing that surprises me today is that anybody could actually believe in a buy-and-hold philosophy. But things do change, and more people are seeing that, whether it's because of program traders, you know, ETF use. But liquidity matters, and the ability to sell or buy at a price that you want and not suffer through every bear market, that more and more people are understanding that they do need an approach to mitigating risk. And in my case, that means don't have anything worse than a small loss. I was asked also about my strengths and weaknesses as an investor. I think the biggest strength I have, the fact that I have a very keen understanding of the primary emotions, greed and fear. I have a master's in psychology, so that gives me a leg up on that one. Not only do greed and fear move the markets, more than anything else, more than anything, but the understanding helps me communicate with clients. The conservative investor always seems to crave just a little more moderate risk when markets are bullish and moving higher. The aggressive investor usually downshifts to a more conservative stance during times of stress. Watch the aggressive investor when the market falls 500 points. Doesn't usually, you'd be surprised, but they're not going buy, buy, buy. They're thinking, what do I do now? What do I do now? So aggressiveness is not measured on, wanting to buy Indonesia and the Philippines when they're soaring. Aggressive investing means when things are not doing so well, you're thinking more in terms of buying fear. And you don't see a lot of people who are that comfortable with that. But understanding emotionality and removing emotions from the sell decision are probably my primary strengths. Weaknesses? I think I have a lot more failings as a human being than I do as an investor. That is to say that I can exhibit a New York attitude, born and raised there. I could be super lazy when it comes to going to the gym. I don't call my mom as much as I should. But as an investor, I use a wide range of data to make the best possible decision. Those decisions aren't always right. Maybe I get it right 75% of the time. What's important is that after I make a decision, I mechanize the process to remove the emotional attachment so that the outcome is going to be a small gain, a large gain, or a small loss. And that's the best way to invest. Simply remove the risk of a large loss. It's the most important thing about investing. It's not being the upside, wow, we picked the big stock that jumped 100%, or wow, he knew when to short at the perfect time. No, that's not it. It's recognizing that you don't have big losses. You have small gains, large gains. There might be a few large gains, a whole host of small gains, a ton of small losses if that's what it is. You still come out way on top as long as you just don't get killed in any one big decision. So, philosophy. Well, I tell people that the markets will drive you crazy if you try to predict them. What you need to focus on are the things that you can control, because you can't control oil prices or interest rates or what Europe's going to do next, their government, or what the U.S. government's going to do. You can't control earnings expectations, unemployment data. You can't control computerized market program trading. Well, what can you control? You can control the outcome of every investment decision so that you never suffer a large loss. You can control the passive income that comes with yield and interest and dividends. The higher the yield, the higher your returns. It's a basic rule. It doesn't mean you have to go yield hunting all of the time. Just apples to apples comparisons and make sure that you have some in there. You can control costs. The lower your costs, the higher your returns. Some simple things like that and controlling the outcome. You control the yield, the costs, the outcome. That's my philosophy toward the market. That is success. So as an ETF investor, I've been asked some specifics about ETFs, such as what are the primary benefits. Number one is the liquidity, which is tradability. You're getting low-cost indexing and you're able to trade them on your own terms. So the low-cost indexing gives you that diversification and the benefit of low costs, which really the Vanguard Revolution brought to the table. It beat trying to pick stocks on your own. It beat commission-based mutual funds. It beat even the no-load mutual funds. Basically, Vanguard indexes outperform everything else. Because the lower the cost, the better returns. You got the diversification. Now, the only thing that was missing there was the ability to trade to avoid a big down. So you need an exit strategy to manage risk effectively, and that's what ETFs give you. You get low-cost diversification via indexing, and you're able to limit the downside risk associated with things like the dot-com blow-up of 2000 to 2002, the credit collapse of 2008, and God knows what will happen in 2011. Now, there are negatives to ETFs or ETF-only approaches. ETFs won't always capture the unique alpha that's presented by, say, an Apple or an Altria. So you can diversify your access to the markets through mostly having ETFs, but also having some individual issues and having some mutual funds. The other problem with ETFs, some do not trade enough. You do not want to get wide bid-ask spreads and having difficulty selling in a big sell-off. You need to stick with the high volume, high daily dollar volume that has to exceed 250,000 to even really consider them, in my opinion. And too many ETFs aren't that way. I was asked about the future of ETFs and what's coming down the pipeline and what do I like and what don't I like. There are some exceptions in the income arena, fixed income arena, and alternative asset arena, but I can tell you that I don't like active stock ETFs. I like index ETFs. One of the premier benefits of stock ETFs is the tracking of an index, and the established index is even better. Index tracking gives exposure to a desired area at the lowest cost and greatest tax efficiency. Most indexes don't rebalance more than a few times a year. So the costs are less because you don't have an active stock picker. There's not going to be a bunch of trades in between that would, you know, cause more tax implications. Bottom line, if you really thought active ETFs were any good, just go look at the closed-end funds with high volume. They're called closed-end funds, CEFs. Now, in the income arena, it's a different story. There can be active management there as opposed to just an index. And I happen to like quite a bit Wisdom Tree Asian Local Debt, ticker symbol ALD. Not quite as fun, but I do like Wisdom Tree Emerging Market Local Debt, ELD. These are important developments because while there are other foreign bond offerings that have been around a while, they're dollar denominated. And if you think that the dollar is going to continue to lose value to foreign currencies, then these local debt funds are worthy of consideration. Because not only does Asia have the ability to pay its debts, and they're not suffering from a debt crisis or a deficit that's beyond sustainable or austerity or low growth, but they also have currencies that are likely to appreciate. So you can win two ways. And if you really want to get technical, the fact is that as they're fighting inflation in Asia and emerging markets, they're almost done with raising the rates. And once they stop raising them, and once they begin to either keep it even or lower them even, then you're going to see yields go down and bond prices go up. You're going to win. So those are good developments. In the stock arena, I think index trackers in areas that you may not have had previous access to are worth consideration. Things like Chile or Poland or New Zealand, even the Philippines, they may not be right this minute, but the fact that you have access to them are good developments. You should have access to pretty much everything in the world. You have to watch out for gimmicks, but there are countries that are truly either in great shape, like a New Zealand or Chile, or are emerging markets worthy of taking a look at, whether it's the Poland or the Philippines. So I like those. So last but not least, when asked about where this ETF industry is heading, I think you're going to see a lot of growth in active ETFs. It does not interest me, not active stock ETFs anyway. And I think you may see a lot more efforts at commodity products that come closer to spot price. Whether that's good or not remains to be seen, but at least it helps with people's expectations of what they are trying to get. There may be more small and mid-cap funds for key countries and regions. I do think at some point you're going to see this oversaturation. There will be industry consolidation. The Vanguard, State Street, BlackRock, they'll probably gobble up some of the second or third tier players. Other companies may go belly up. Bottom line, though, is ETFs are definitely here to stay, just as mutual funds are here to stay and individual access is here to stay. There's just three different ways to access the market. ETFs are the hybrid and, in my opinion, the best. And if I didn't think so, I wouldn't be talking about it since 92. So appreciate you listening to this podcast and a recent interview by Charles Kirk of the Kirk Report. I appreciate the Kirk Report's willingness to let me discuss the interview on this podcast. Are you terrified that an economic disaster is near? Are you scared to death that you won't be able to protect your investments? And what about when investments inevitably go back up? Will you know what to do? You've been following me since the 90s. Let me show you how I have protected my clients' assets in the bad times and how I can help you grow your investments in the better times. I will manage your investments the way that I manage my own investments, with my time-tested, smart, and balanced approach. Give me a call at 888-500-GARY. That's 888-500-4279.